Welcome to another edition of Now is the Time with Steve Berkson on Hebrew Nation Radio. Now is the Time is a production of MTOI, Messianic Torah Observant Israel. For more information, visit MTOI.org. Now, here's Steve.
All right, so today we're going to continue our Are You Covenanted series with Part 44. Are You Covenanted to Part 44? Now, we're still going to be in 2 Corinthians just for a little bit. I just want to finish and close out some things in chapter 6, but let's remind ourselves what we've been dealing with up to this point. Up to this point, Paul has been working at reestablishing authority within the structure, at least of the body he's working with, okay? And that's a big thing. And the issues at hand is, who is your authority? In other words, who are you listening to? Who are you being guided by? Who are you being discipled by? Because that's what's really going on here with the Corinthian congregation, is that there are others coming in trying to influence the people in the group. And he starts off making, you know, cases and arguments. Actually, he makes arguments for why he doesn't have to make a case or argument for his credentials. He says, do I need to reestablish my credentials with you? He starts that off. We read that last time. But the issue, I think, as always for us, is to read what we read and try to say, well, what parts, if anything, in what I'm reading apply to me today? And so I would ask you to ask yourself the same question, you know, who's your authority? Who do you treat as authoritative in your life? Is it, you know, is it me? Is it a friend sitting next to you? Is it your family member, like a parent or a sister or a brother? Is it a coworker? Who are you giving authority in your life? And I'm not talking in the bigger sense. Everybody says, well, I give a Yeshua my authority. Well, yes, you do, but no, you don't really. You're still influenced by human beings. And so who are the human beings that are influencing you? There was a problem here in the Corinthians, in the Corinthian congregation, where I believe they were having a challenge with several influences. You had the traditional Jewish community that were pushing in certain directions about just keeping mechanically the law and not accepting Messiah Yeshua as the Messiah. And you also have the Gentile influences of those coming in that wanted to bring in or maintain some of their Gentile positions and trying to incorporate that or syncretize it in. Not synchronize, but syncretize, taking two things and putting them together that don't really belong. And so there were these influences going on within the body. And Paul's trying to grab a hold of the reins here and say, hold on. Why are you listening to all those people? Why aren't you listening to me? Didn't I do all these things for you already? Didn't I raise you up? Didn't I teach you and instruct you and help open your eyes to the truth about Torah, the truth about Messiah, and how they fit together? And he's going to continue here in 2 Corinthians, and then we're going to go into Romans, and we're going to see how it then continues, not only from that point of view, but to reestablish the connection to being Israel, but being Messianic Israel, not just bloodline Israel. Okay? So it really has to do with the authority. And more often than not, we are being guided or discipled by or listening to the authority that we feel. This is in big quotes in my notes. I actually wrote some notes. Be very proud. Okay. More often than not, the people or who it is that's influencing us are the ones that we feel, because it's an emotional thing, are right for us. It feels right to me. This feels right to me, or I agree. And it's not necessarily the one that actually is right, period. Like, it's just right. Because some of you won't hear what's right because you didn't like the way it was delivered. You didn't like the tone of voice. You didn't like the personality. You didn't like whatever. It was done privately. It was done publicly. But it's right or it's wrong when it comes to these kind of things. It's, you know, we have to look at it from that point of view. And a lot of us are being influenced by those and listening to people that are saying things that because it feels right to us. And but don't let the emotions drive, okay? Be careful with that. Because I think we've had a lot of people that we have known over the time, you know, whether it's people that have been here in this congregation, just in our lives, that when you've been in other places, who have left wherever you were because they went towards something that they liked better. It appealed to them more, or it felt more comfortable. It wasn't really about the doctrine or the teachings. It had to do with how it felt, the comfortableness or the comfort of it. And so I think you have that in a lot of these congregations that Paul's dealing with, because you have Jews in them. You have Gentiles in them. They have their comforts. Look, there's a reason why some people are drawn to the Mesopentecostals, you know, or the Mesobaptists, or the Messo-Catholics, or the Messianic Jewish, right? Because it feels comfortable to their familiarity pieces. And so you tend to be drawn to those places because you have the new mixed with the familiar. Does that make sense? Is everybody kind of tracking with that? That mix of the new with the familiar. And this really is, you know, very challenging and problematic because you can get very easily tripped up by the comfortable and familiar because it feels good and it feels safe and it feels right, even if it's not. At least it can be that way. So you have to be careful with that. All right. Be careful that you're not reacting because there's an emotional discomfort or an emotional challenge. But informationally, try to be as more rational, logical, and sit back and go, okay, but is the information correct? Even though it feels comfortable, feels familiar. And the answer is, if the answer is no, then that rest of that part of that piece has just get ignored. It doesn't matter that it's comfortable. You can be very comfortable in the wrong place. Matter of fact, you have a lot of friends and family members that you have tried to talk to who have ignored what you've said or just can't receive it because they are too comfortable where they are. Remember when we first started teaching the CC 101 series, the Covenant Community 101 series, we talked about how he starts by disturbing your shalom, your peace. In other words, he makes you uncomfortable. Okay? That's how it starts. You have to become uncomfortable. So then you have to seek what's going to put you back in that place of shalom. But not because it matches what you looked at as comfort before, but because you're going to come to this new place of true shalom and see what that new thing looks like. All right? So all of that was to get us back to chapter 6 here because there was a whole lot going on in the couple of chapters that we read. And I believe we read it starting in chapter 3. So now we're going to go through chapter 6 real quickly. But I wanted to make sure that we reset the context here. The context really is about who is influencing you and Paul trying to reestablish himself as the person they should be listening to. And I could feel for him in this because I run into that challenge all the time with the people that have been put under my care. A lot of times they'll contact me and ask me about this or that or something they heard from some other teacher. And I'm like, why are you listening to that? And then they want me to explain what the other teacher meant. I said, how do I know? I didn't say it. He did. Why are you asking me what he meant? Some other teacher. You know, I can tell you what I mean about what I say. So, I mean, I have a bunch of empathy for what Paul's going through here because I can see how that must be going on and what that's all about, okay? Now, so let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 6, and we'll pick it up here in verse 1. He goes, and working together, we also call upon you not to receive the favor of Elohim in vain. Okay, so don't receive it and then make it worth nothing. That's the idea of the vain thing here, is putting in a futile effort. You're putting in an effort, but it's to no point, to no avail. Okay? This is just like the commandment, the third commandment says, don't take the name and make it of no value. Okay, take the name in vain and make it of no value, of no worth. Because after all, if you take the name upon yourself and you walk and do whatever you want and not just what he wants, you've now given people the impression that that's what the name represents. He says, look, you did not receive the favor of Elohim to just go do whatever you want. It was not a futile thing that he gave it to you for. For he says, in an acceptable time I have heard you. In a day of deliverance I have helped you. See, now is the well-accepted time. See, now is the day of deliverance. Giving no cause of stumbling in whatever, so that the service is not blamed. Rather, we commend ourselves as servants of Elohim in every way. In much endurance, in pressures, in hardships, in distresses, in stripes, in imprisonments, in disturbances, in toils, in watchings, in fastings. It sounds like last week for me. Okay, no. In cleanness, in knowledge, in patience, in kindness, in the set-apart spirit, in love, unfeigned, in the word of truth, in the power of Elohim, through the weapons of righteousness on the right and on the left. Through esteem and disrespect, through evil report and good report, regarded as deceivers and yet true, as unknown and yet well known, as dying and see we live, as disciplined and yet not killed, as sad, yet always rejoicing, as poor, yet enriching many, as having none, and yet possessing all. So he's sitting there going, do you have any idea what it's like to be me? He's saying, look, we got people think we're the greatest and people think we're the worst. We've got people that are giving us blessing and people that are giving us cursing. People think that we're liars and deceivers, think we're telling the truth. I mean, it's a miserable position to be in. He says, our mouth has spoken openly to you, O Corinthians. Our heart is wide open. So he's trying to, again, appeal to the Corinthians, as he's been doing here for a couple of chapters, explaining that, look, we've done all these things for one purpose, to be servants in the ministry of Yeshua to you, the group here in Corinth. Okay? You are not restrained by us, but you are restrained by your own affections. Ah, there's the problem I was just talking about. Their affections for either, like, you know, by the way, a lot of Gentiles have this problem. We can go in both directions. There are things that the Jewish community sees the Gentiles doing and they desire it. We see that through history. Israel and Judah having desires to go after the things that the Gentiles seem to think is great. But we see the other side of it. Gentiles wanted to go and turn around and become Jewish. It's the affections, the heart, the wanting and desiring of something somebody else has and not actually desiring what he's already gotten for you, what he's provided for you, what is the thing that's for you. He says, our heart is open, you're not restrained, but you are restrained. You're not restrained by us, he's saying, but you are restrained by your own affections. And by restrained, what do you think he means by restrained? In other words, let's put it in a different English. What's holding you back? It's not so much restrain, like somebody's holding you and tying you, but what is actually keeping you from growing, keeping you from progressing? What's holding you back? He says, you're not being held back by us. We're not holding you back. But your affections are holding you back. Your desires are holding you back. The things that you love, the things that you want. But for the same reward, I speak as to children, open wide your hearts too. Okay, so he says, our heart is open wide. He says, open wide. Also, you do the same thing. The word hearts there is actually, your hearts is in italics, that was added. But in the context of what he said one verse earlier, you could see how that would make sense. He said, we have open hearts towards you, open wide yours as well. Do not, now see the context here. All this context, now you can look at this verse 14, hopefully in a much, much clearer way than maybe ever before. He says, do not become unevenly yoked with unbelievers. Okay, now that line comes in the context of everything since chapter 3, probably all the way to chapter 1. He's saying, look, you're yoking yourself. Okay, so what is yoking? Now, I know a lot of people like to use the actual physical metaphor of cattle and when you yoke them to plow, etc. And when you have an unequal yoking, you don't get a straight line and that kind of thing. But really, the metaphor here, and would have been understood in this day, is that yoking is a discipleship phrase. Yeshua says, take upon you my yoke. In other words, be taught or instructed by me in the idea of not just as a teacher, but as a discipler. So he's saying here, do not become yoked or unevenly yoked with an unbeliever. He says, what partnership? Okay, so yoking is a partnership. For what partnership have righteousness with lawlessness? And what fellowship has light with darkness? And what agreement has Messiah with Belial? Or what part does a believer have with an unbeliever? So he just took it full circle there. Now, by unbeliever, we could call unbeliever a Jew that doesn't believe in Messiah. We can call it a Gentile that believes in Messiah, doesn't believe in the Torah, or any combination of all of that mess. He's talking about as a believer, his definition is one that is Torah observant and believes in Messiah. So when he says unbeliever, and a lot of you have heard me say this before, but one of the things that kind of wears me out and exhausts me is when a person comes up to me and says, well, you know, my friend so-and-so at work, well, she's a believer or he's a believer. Well, what does that mean? Well, they're Christian and they believe in the Messiah in a Christian sense, so that makes them a believer. Because after all, your whole life as a Christian, you were told that makes you a believer. Well, you know what? You can find everybody and anybody on the street and they're all believers in something. I mean, they could be believers in Islam, Buddhism, atheism. You know, they could be secular humanism or any Hinduism. They could be anything. But they're believers. Christian, Jew, they're all believers in something. But when Paul's using the phrase, what does he mean? He's talking about those that would embrace the fullness, which is Torah observance and Messiah. Because remember, he has a dual audience here. Those that are coming from the non-Torah base, that he's trying to get them to accept Torah, and those from the non-Messiah base, trying to get them to accept Yeshua. Seems like we're still doing that today. Not a whole lot has changed. All right? So he says, do not become unevenly yoked. In other words, don't yoke yourself with someone who's not the same as you in terms of who you're choosing to have instruct you. Are you being instructed and discipled through Torah observant messianic understanding, like through Yeshua and Torah together? Because a lot of people are out there going, well, I really like such and such teacher. Well, does that such and such teacher do both? A lot of really great rabbi Jewish teachers out there that some people might like, and guess what? But they're not teaching both. And what can happen is your affections can pull you away. Some of you sit there going, not me, Rabbi. Well, maybe you're the exception, but do you want to risk it? Why would you risk it? I'm not saying you couldn't be an exception. There probably are some people that can do it. But be careful with that. There are people with the same thing where there are other teachers out there that are teaching a very well, quote unquote, what appears to be very well versed, well trained and studied in the Bible, who either A, don't believe in Messiah, or don't believe in Torah. Because there's some of you still listen to some of your old Christian teachers that you used to like. Look, there are guys out there, I won't name the name, but you know there's a guy out there that almost all you messianics know him, but he doesn't believe in Messiah. But you think he knows the Bible better than you do. Now maybe you can handle that. Not everybody can. And so you know what? A lot of people that follow these people end up going in one direction or the other instead of staying where they're on the path they're supposed to stay on. That could work for you. I'm not saying, so some of you are thinking, well, I like him and I'm, well, you're doing that's great, but just recognize that not the majority. The majority will eventually make a decision to release either one or the other. They'll either let go of Yeshua or they'll let go of the Torah. That's just the reality. That's what Paul's dealing with here with the Corinthian congregation. He's saying, look, if you keep going the path you're going, you're going to let go of one or the other. Or you're going to twist it and pervert it from what it's actually designed to be. It no longer will be what it was originally, what it is. I don't even say what it originally was supposed to be. You'll also twist the understanding of what it actually is. Because Yeshua is. So it's not about you. Whether you understand him correctly or not doesn't change anything. He is what he is. He is who he is. Same thing with the Torah. It doesn't matter if you understand it right or wrong. It is what it is. You may be twisting it or inappropriately, you know, maneuvering it to your convenience, but it still is what it is, regardless of what you do to it. Okay, you can't hurt the truth. You can't mess the truth up. The truth is still going to be the truth. You may embrace it incorrectly or incompletely or in your own twisted way of doing it. And if you don't like the word twisted, well, that's too bad. That's what you're doing. Sorry about that. It is what it is. But this is what Paul is dealing with here. Okay? This is really the problem. Remember, he's talking about, all the way back into chapter 3, he's talking about covenant. He does mention that in verse 6. He says, look, he says, where am I? I'm in the right place here. 3. In verse 6, he said, also made us competent as servants of a renewed covenant. So covenant is a context here. We see this again in verse 14 of chapter 3. But their minds were hardened for it to this day when the old covenant is being read. So he keeps connecting in that word covenant, but it's that idea goes forward all the way here to chapter 6. Look, if you and I are having a conversation, conversations generally have a starting point and ending point. Someone might walk in somewhere in the middle of all that, towards the beginning or towards the end. Or let's say they were there at the beginning and they walk away before it's ended. And guess what? They're not going to really have the full context of what's going on. Some of you have had this experience. You suggested a teaching maybe that I have done to some, you know, done and shared, and you recommended it to somebody. And let's say it has, I don't know, 11, 12, 14 parts, whatever it has. And you say to your friend, you know, what did you think? And the friend goes, oh, I don't agree with that stuff. And then you might be smart enough to ask the question, did you listen to the whole thing? No, I heard, after part 2 or whatever, I thought I figured it out. You're not going to really know what my point was until you listen to the whole thing. That's why there's 11 parts or 8 parts, because it took that long to make the whole point. And so the same thing with verses. If you are reading a little thing going on here in chapter 6, but you don't remember, because maybe, I'm not saying you didn't read chapter 3 some point in your life, but if you have no idea in terms of a front of your mind remembers, like it's right there, they go, oh, I know exactly what Paul's talking about because I remember the point he started off making 3 chapters earlier. It may get a little extra work for you, maybe a little exhausting maybe to think about it, but you know what? When you're reading verses and you're looking at it, don't hesitate to kind of turn a couple of pages back just to see, like, where does this start? What was the real issue here? Remember, context is who's speaking, who's the audience, where are they, when is it happening, and what is the issue? Okay, so you got Paul talking to the Corinthian congregation, and the issue is they are listening to people he doesn't think they should be listening to. And apparently their listening is having an effect. They're being influenced. Anybody concerned about that? You should be. It's happening today. Go on YouTube any moment of the day and you'll find people out there trying to influence you, including me. Well, no doubt I'm on the internet, available with the teachings, hoping to influence you in a direction of the way I understand Messiah, Torah, and the Father. But now that's up to you then to filter through and look for the yoking. Looking for the anointing and the appointing so you can yoke. And he says, don't be unequally yoked with an unbeliever. And he really equates this to light and darkness, to right and wrong, to righteousness, lawlessness, etc. He says, and by the way, it's weird because, you know, some of you might not have even caught this, but in verse 15, I just caught it now to say it. And what agreement has Messiah with Belial? And you might be thinking, well, of course Messiah has no agreement with the devil or some sort of demonist. What, well, Belial? Some pagan? Well, wait a minute. But those, let's take it from the context of what I've been saying just for the last, you know, few minutes here, the last 21 minutes. What relationship or agreement has Messiah with something that's been claiming and being represented to be Messiah? Because all of these pagan things claim to be the Father, Son, or some combination of, don't they? So, and what agreement has the truth with the twist of the truth? So it's not just light and dark, but it's what agreement has Messiah with that, which by the way, now he's connecting, saying that the twisted truth is still darkness. Even though it looks like, seems like, is close, whatever, but it's not. It really is not the same thing. And then he rounds it out again and says, so what part does a believer, Torah observant, believer in Yeshua have with a unbeliever? And again, unbeliever could be either one of those two parts or both of them. But because he's talking to the guys in Corinth, I'm going to guess, I could be wrong, but I think it's a reasonable guess, that the people were not straight out believing in nothing. They were believing in one part or the other, and they were starting to try to influence people in that direction. And this is where you eventually see this split. The split between the Gentile, quote-unquote, believers, deciding that anything that's Torah observant, because they were so having such a high animosity with the Jewish side of the other, you know, the other half of the Jewish believers, that they said, hey, anything that smells like, looks like, and resembles a Jew or Judaizing is wrong. We're not going to do anything that looks like that, because it was such a rift. We're talking about a rift like when you see tribal stuff going on in history. You see this in even in the Eastern European areas where there's, you know, the hatreds that run long, or in Africa and other places where there's tribal stuff that goes back generations and generations and generations, that as soon as a governmental hand comes off of there that imposed some sort of peace, they start killing each other. Right? I mean, in recent times, we've seen this. Right now, we see this in Africa. We see this. We saw it in Eastern Europe. You know, when the Soviet Union kind of fell apart, all those animosities, the Serbs and the Croats and these other things, and they're all going at each other. That's ancient stuff, so to speak, that had been forced to be put down. And he's saying because there is no, you can't have agreement between those things. And so what happens is the early church fathers, who were huge anti-Semites, I know the church holds them up as the greatest of all people. But if you go read some of the things they wrote, they were just out of control, crazy pagans, and had some really strange things that they believed. I mean, strange in general, not just Torah and Yeshua, but But they had this thing against the Jewish side of the equation. This thing started out with Jews. And then the Gentiles were allowed to be grafted, and they were then sent to be, the word was shared with them. Kepha, Peter was sent, Paul was sent, and they started to bring. But instead of coming together, as we're going to read in Romans 11, it might take us a little while to get to Romans 11, but we're going to go to Romans next. But we're going to see how they were supposed to graft in together, not have this animosity. But that's what's there. And that's what we see. And so that's all happening here in Corinth. The birthing of all of that is happening. You can see it's starting to develop here. This lack of being able to yoke together properly of the Jewish community and the Gentile community who are trying to embrace Torah and Yeshua together. And they're struggling. And they're struggling because there are those who are trying to become the influencers, the authorities that would influence either section, the Jews not to be doing anything with the Gentiles or the Gentiles not to do anything with the Jews. Don't we see this still today? Absolutely we do. Nothing has changed. It's the human nature that needs to become his nature. Our human nature has all that in it. His nature doesn't. So we still have prejudices. We still have racism. We still have religiousism, whatever you want to call it. We already have religious hatred. We hate people of different beliefs. We've got all of this hatred and this isolation. And, you know, we believe in a creator that made man kind as a whole. So I don't care if you're confused about your gender. He made all those of us that are in the human being category. Tall, short, fat, skinny, women, men, black, yellow, white, green, purple, doesn't matter. He made everybody. He has no favorites, but he has a preference for a way things should be done, and used a particular people to show what that was supposed to look like, with then the opportunity for everyone to come into that designation called Israel. Not that Israel is special because of their birth. Paul makes that point so many times over and over and over again. So does Yeshua, by the way. That it's not about your birth. It's about the fact that you were still made in the image of the Creator. All of you, no matter what you look like, no matter what you were raised as, no matter what your culture was, but we're hindered by the way we were raised, what we know, what we experienced. You know, we were indoctrinated, we were trained, we were, you know, made to believe a certain way, and now we have to break free of all that. This is where he says, look, open wide your hearts too. Don't be so drawn away by your affections. Verse 16, he says, and what union has the dwelling place of Elohim with idols? In other words, that's mixing the things. Okay, dwelling place of Elohim is what? The place where you go to worship your creator. What are idols? The place where you go to worship a false Elohim. So he's showing that they're the same, but they're not the same. So he's not talking about things that are just completely disconnected. He's trying to compare things that you would think is similar. Messiah versus Belial, which would be like a fake Messiah. Light versus darkness, believer versus unbeliever, righteousness versus lawlessness. And by the way, lawlessness doesn't mean, let's just keep it so, sort of clear and simple, lawlessness doesn't mean that you're just out there doing absolutely anything you want without any sense of what's right or wrong. It's talking about righteousness meaning Torah observant versus not Torah observant. Because you can still be not Torah observant and not kill people and not steal from people and do things that societally we kind of, as a norm, would accept as right and wrong. Can't we do that? I mean, even our legal system tells you adultery's wrong, stealing's wrong, murder's wrong, you know. And everybody in the society pretty much agrees, no matter what belief system you come from, that those things are just wrong. And so most governments, most, you know, out, you know, societal gatherings, any kind of groupings together, kind of have these rules in place. Even if you go out to some place that seems very backwoods and not in a big city and maybe more tribal or whatever, their gatherings together in a communal way generally has that stealing's wrong and murder's wrong. And, you know, I mean, that's, we kind of know these things. So when he's saying righteous and lawless, I think we're talking about Torah. He says, there are people out there that think that they have laws. And Paul talks about this quite a bit. The law of sin and death, the law that rules in your members. In other words, you're thinking you know what's right and wrong. versus what Yah says is right and wrong. That's what's going on here in verse 14. The battle between what you think is right and wrong. By the way, I think it's clear in one of the verses where it says, the way that seems right to a man leads to death. So much for our thinking we know what's right and wrong. Oh no, but I know, Rabbi. I don't know, was that verse doesn't apply to you? It applies to everybody. The way that seems right to man, the key word there is seems. It seems right to you. Yahweh doesn't have any problem with seems. With him, it is or it isn't right. There's no seems. Okay? He's not confused. He's not guessing. this kind of seems right to me, so maybe we'll just go this way. Oh, no. He's already seen the end from the beginning. He knows which way works, which way doesn't work. And his path leads to life, not death. The opposite of what our way, what seems right to us, you know, leads to. So what union does the dwelling place of Elohim with idols? For you are a dwelling place of the living Elohim. As Elohim has said, I shall dwell in them and walk among them, and I shall be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. So now we get back to that whole idea that you are bought and paid for. He says, do you not know that you are the dwelling place of the living Elohim? He says, I shall dwell in them and walk among them. By the way, if you take that verse and match it up with John 14, you understand that Yeshua is not talking about a third entity. Because Yeshua said when John 14, he talks about, and if you love me and guard my commandments, I shall ask the Father and he'll send you a helper, the Spirit of truth. And later it goes on to say, he says, well, let's just read it. Let's just read it in John 14. He says, if you love me, verse 15, and shall guard my commands, I shall ask the Father and he'll give you another helper to stay with you forever, the Spirit of truth. Now listen, this reads exactly like what Paul's saying. Whom the world is unable to receive because it does not see him or know him, but you know him, for he stays with you and shall be in you. Oh, ding, 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 ding. Verse 16 of chapter 6 of 2 Corinthians, he says, and I shall dwell in them and walk among them, and I shall be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. It started with Yeshua coming in the flesh. It ultimately fulfills in Revelation 21 with the new Jerusalem and the new heavens and the new earth. When it says, and now Elohim is dwelling amongst us. He says back to John 14, 17, the Spirit of truth. And in case we're confused, Yeshua already defined that, you know, 10 verses earlier. When he said in verse 6, I am the way and the truth and the life. And actually in the Greek, it's probably better translated, I am way, truth, and life. Not it's just like, I am way, I am the path. I am truth. I am life. So he's going to send the Spirit of truth, the Spirit of Yeshua, whom the world is unable to receive because it does not see him or know him. But you know him, for he stays with you. So right there, he's saying them, you know, because he's right here with you already and you know him. And in case that's not clear, verse 18 says, I shall not leave you orphans. I am coming to you. And you sit there reading that going, how in the world did the church screw that up? And I didn't understand that. It was right there in front of my face. I mean, he defines it all for you right there very clearly. I am coming to you. I am the truth. The Spirit of truth is coming to help you. I am coming to you. I'm just not going to be coming to you in a physical body like I've been with you at this point. I'm going to be coming to you through this means by which, called the Ruach, the Spirit, so that I can be with you, guiding you, and available to you to lead you into all truth. And so here Paul's quoting this basically, while he's quoting other things as well, when he's saying, and what union has the dwelling place of Elohim with idols? For you are the dwelling place. He says, I shall dwell in them and walk among them and shall be their Elohim and they shall be my people. Therefore, you got to love these therefores. Therefore means, because of everything that I just said, for this to be the way it has to be, therefore, because of all this, you need to come out of her, my people. Come out from among them and be separate. Come out from among who? The unequally yoked people, the lawless, the darkness, the Belial stuff, the unbeliever stuff. Oh, but we don't like to separate ourselves because, after all, that doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like that's what God would want. Yahweh wouldn't want me to like cut off myself from certain family and friends and coming out away from them, separating from them. Therefore, come out from among them and be separate. Is there a confusion as to what Paul's saying here? Now remember, we just read 3, 4, 5, and 6. We read a bunch of chapters to get, 4 chapters to get to this point. So you should understand what he's talking about. In other words, if you hang out with, spend time with, then it's possible you'll be influenced by these people. Because remember, everything he's talking about is about authority and influence. Who's influencing you? That's your choice, by the way. You have total freedom to decide who's influencing you. Some of you would say, oh no, I was controlled and manipulated and everything. Well, maybe when you were a child. All right, so grow up. Own it, fix it, and release all that junk. Yes, maybe there were those who controlled you, influenced you, and pressured you, etc., and you did those things in those days. But you know what? He set you free. So you can choose the master to whom you serve. He didn't set you free to have no master. Because even those who think they have no master are still sitting on the throne themselves. You're now the king. So you're still not without a master. He said, but look, you got to come out from among them and be separate, says Yahweh. By the way, he's not saying, there are things where Paul says, this is me. But we know that Yahweh has said this, come out of my people, be separate. And do not touch what is unclean, I shall receive you. Do not touch what is unclean. Now, he's not all of a sudden, out of all of these chapters reading, talking about touching a dead animal. Or something that is tameh. What is he saying is unclean? The thinking, the instruction, the yoking coming from those that are lawless or Torahless, darkness, Belial, unbelievers, all of this stuff. Don't touch what is unclean. Don't touch it. Don't watch the videos. Don't buy the books. Don't buy, get the CDs and the DVDs of this stuff.
Oh, but you don't understand, Rabbi. This guy was very important in my life and helped me to see blah, 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 blah.
Great. But now you know more. Let it go. I don't know. You can totally disagree with me. I'm just reading what's on the book right here. Do not touch it and I shall receive you. Don't mess with it, is what he's saying. It's not like, oh, look, there's a dead animal. I shouldn't just go touch it. No, you shouldn't. But what else is unclean to you? And you're touching it. You're participating. You're bringing it in. Oh, but you don't understand. No, you don't understand. Stop telling me I don't understand. Okay? What you don't understand is that you're still being led by the affections. What's holding you back? Your own affections. Go back and read verse 12, right? Your own affections. I don't understand, Rabbi. I feel like I'm really struggling here. Well, what's holding you back? Your affections. You're still loving and holding on to and desiring and feel emotionally bound to something that you need to release. You need to let it go. You need to be separate from. Oh, but you don't understand. You know, a lot of people are struggling right now because weddings, funerals, graduations, whatever, that they didn't get to go to or need to make those hard choices. But you don't understand. My family members will never talk to me again, but you don't understand. I don't know, Yeshua said, if you don't love them less by comparison than you love him, you're not even worthy of his being a disciple. You're not worthy of the kingdom. That's hard. It may seem really harsh, but he loves you enough to know that if you don't do that, they will lead you to keep moving that line and you keep crossing and moving the line until the next thing you know, you're Torahless. It doesn't take much. Once you break one, you start breaking them all. You compromise. He knows. It sounds harsh. It sounds cold. But you need to have that strength of conviction coming from him that you can't even touch of this. Oh, I can walk in that bar, Mr. Alcoholic, and not get a drink. No, you can't. Oh, I can, you know what I'm saying? Oh, I can do this, Mr. Whatever you're addicted to or Miss Whatever you're addicted to. No, you can't. Don't touch it. You can't even touch it. If you've ever been addicted to anything and you've gone to some sort of a system that helps you to break free, they tell you, you from now on, the rest of your life, you cannot even touch it. You can't even be where it is. Get away from the access. Don't even give yourself the temptation. Why? Because you tend to be led by your own affections. This is just the truth. Receive it or not. And some of you are still going to sit there going, I know what he's talking about. He's talking about me because I'm still doing this or I'm still hanging out with these people. So, yes, I am. But I'm not because I'm saying it, it's because he's saying it. So yes, I am. That doesn't mean we need to be harsh and cold to them. You just can't be sitting there in a place where they can eventually, potentially be an influence. Come out from among and be separate. When you see them, be friendly. Interact, always be friendly, be warm, be loving, exemplify Yeshua, but you don't have to be among. It's the among that's the problem. Being among them, hanging out with them, being in a place where you can potentially be influenced. The unequally yoked. I love when the people say to me, well, you know, I still go to my Sunday church because, you know, I'm trying to help them all see the truth. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Don't ever tell me that. That's just garbage. You're there because you're lonely and that's where your friends are, or that's where your heart is and your affections, and you spin it in your own head thinking, because I haven't met one person yet that actually had any positive effect in bringing people out, because if they really were doing it, they'd have been thrown out. And don't you tell me I'm wrong. If they were really sharing truth in their church, they would have been shown the door. Anybody wear that shirt? You tried that and saw what happened. Oh, but you don't understand. I'm by myself and all my friends and family and everybody. I'm sorry, but that's just what he called you under those conditions. He has a plan for that. Maybe you need to move. I got a suggestion. In Tennessee, somewhere named Cleveland. But I'm just saying is, he called you knowing those were your conditions. Are we clear on that? He called you when you were in the whole, whatever context of your life was, he called you at your age, in your physical location, with the people around you that you have, with all of the influences that you have. I mean, he didn't have a problem knowing, oh, I didn't realize that you were so close to your family and friends. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have called you now. What was wrong with me? What was I thinking? No, he wants to know what you're thinking. He has no problem thinking correctly. Why do you have such a struggle accepting that he absolutely was fully aware of what you were going through when he called you? I've had people say, why did he wait till I was 67 years old? I don't know, but he did. Stop complaining. Embrace it. What if he didn't call you at all? And you know, he called you at 67. Be happy. He could have waited till you were 77. So be happy it wasn't 77. Whatever. He opened your eyes. Rejoice. He opened your ears. Rejoice. He put you in some really challenging places so that you can show that you are loyal to him. Rejoice. Pass the test and rejoice. You act like he doesn't know what he's doing. It's incredible. Because if I ever asked you if you thought he knows what he's doing, well, of course, Rabbi, I know he knows what he's doing. Then why do you act like you don't think he knows what he's doing? But if I don't go, my daughter will never talk to me again. Well, maybe that's true. So what? I'm not like uncaring about that, but so what? Meaning, why does that have anything to do with your choice? Oh, absolutely. Your heart will break and you will pray for reconciliation and we'll pray for all of that stuff. But it should have zero influence on your decision. That's where the so what comes in. So what? But means you think there's something that should be part of the decision that really doesn't belong in there. So you go, but what about? Or if I do that, if you do that, you'll show your Heavenly Father that you love him more than everything else. That's what you'll show him. But you're worried about what you're going to show your daughter, your brother, your sister, your mother, your whoever. You know? You don't understand. No, you don't understand. Well, not that you don't understand me. You're not understanding him. Stop telling me I don't understand. I don't have to understand. You do when it comes to your walk with him. So stop trying to convince me that your spin is right. You're the one that's got to do whatever you're going to do, and you got to live with it. I only have to live with it if you ask my counsel, and you do what I counsel, then that's on me. And I accept that. And that's why I'm very careful when I counsel. But don't think, because now, see, when you come to me and you try to spin it, you know what you're asking me to do? You're asking me to take on myself the responsibility of agreeing with you when I don't, so now that burden falls on me. No way. Not happening. I'm not going to do it. And I'll call you out on it. Several of you have made the phone call where you've called me up and asked me a question and I had to ask you back. I said, is this because you really don't know what to do or because you don't like the choice? You don't like the answer. Because I've had people say to me, Rabbi, I really don't know what to do. And they start talking, and they're like, really? In this situation, as long as I've known you and how long you've been walking this out, you don't know the right thing to do? No, they're just hoping for some sort of a backdoor escape clause or something. See, some of you don't believe in Santa Claus anymore, but you believe in the escape clause. Ooh, that was a groaner. Okay. Because you're trying to figure out a way around things. All of a sudden, Manny's like, that's going to be the next one I post. I know a lot of you have given up Santa Claus, but you still believe in the escape clause. This is the problem. Own your walk. Okay? Own your walk. And then stop arguing with what he says. But it's inconvenient and it's going to cause suffering and pain within... Yes, it is. And not because he wants to cause that, but because the world you live in is not his world. In other words, they're not submitted under him. If the world was, you'd have none of these issues. You would never be invited to a graduation on Saturday. You'd never be invited to a wedding on Saturday. You'd never be invited to a funeral on Saturday. You'd never be asked to work on Saturday. You know, if it was his world. But he has allowed this world to be under a different influence for right now. Okay? And so, stop making it his fault. If the world would come under his authority, you would never have these issues. Nobody would ever, you'd never have to ask anybody, is there pork in that? Did you use lard to cook that? You'd never have to ask. Because nobody would be doing it. So it's hard because the world is not doing it. Because the world is not submissive. And he's called you at this time, the hardest time in history. Not like this moment, like today in 2019. What I'm saying is, like the time of man walking in the flesh, where we're being taught Torah, without like Yeshua in the, you know, in the millennium, where he's there, actually the word going forth from Zion, etc. This is the hardest time when the world is not his. In other words, the world is not submitted under his authority, yet you have to choose to submit under his authority and walk against the grain, against the stream. This is the hardest time to do it, and that really can put a smile on your Father in the heavens' face. Because you're doing it without all of the ease of, you know, how hard was it in Israel, literally in the beginning, when they first came into the land and they had the pillar and the cloud and all this other stuff, and everything was great for them to keep everything. No problem. And yet still they chose to, what happened? Wait, they went through different lands and they saw what other people were doing and they started to go among instead of coming out from among. As a matter of fact, they brought them in among, right? We see that, right? Going into Pinchas. They brought them in among. And that influence led them astray. You see this with Shlomo, with King Solomon. All the influence of all the wives and the pagan stuff they brought in. Bringing this stuff in. You got to be separate. But it's not easy, Rabbi. Who said it was easy? Well, the church did all my life. Well, that's part of the problem with that system, isn't it? Okay? The book never says it's easy. Yeshua himself never said it was easy. It just doesn't say that. He says, I've suffered, so will you. You need to pick up your cross and follow me. Bear your burdens and understand you are going to have to go through a pretty tough deal. I'm sorry. You know, look, did you read the small print? It's all the same size. Thank you. You remember I said that. Owen's been listening. That's the other half of the joke, right? I say, have you read the small print? And I said, look, there is no small print. It's all of the same size. Read the contract. The contract says, by the way, the contract is only, it's not this gigantic long contract. I know you have a giant book in front of you, but the contract is simple. You do what he says and he takes you as his people. It's not complicated. What's complicated is doing it in a world that is not his at the moment. By his, I mean, yeah, sure, he owns everything, but he's allowing it to do whatever it wants. He's allowing it to not have to be under his authority, to choose for itself, to see that self-sovereignty and allowing Hasatan influence only brings ruin. And this is the reality that we live in. And this is what Paul's talking about. He says, look, come out from among them and be separate, says Yahweh, not says Paul, and do not touch what is unclean, don't interact with it in any way, and I shall receive you. And I shall be a father to you, and you shall be sons and daughters to me, says Yahweh the Almighty. Verse 1 of chapter 7, that's the only verse we're going to read in 7, he goes, having then these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of the flesh and spirit, perfecting set apartness in the fear of Elohim. Having then these promises, in other words, having said all of this stuff, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement, both flesh and spirit. In other words, both from the idea of the flesh, meaning the desires of the flesh, the I want, I like, I desire type of thing, or I don't want, I don't like, but also the spirit, because you could have, now this is not like the ooey gooey thing, but you can have a spirit of rebelliousness, the spirit of complaining. In other words, your intrinsic nature can be wrong. And he says, cleanse yourself of the defilements of those wrong. Look, we had earlier, Candace was mentioning how she had gotten herself into that place where she had this complaining spirit. It's not a being that entered her body, but she found herself caught up in this complaining. Any of us have the same thing. I'm sure if somebody like followed you around, we'd catch you getting into a sort of a whiny, complaining place from time to time. Or a self-sovereign place. And so he's saying, look, cleanse yourself of the flesh and the spirit, perfecting set apartness in the fear of Elohim. Perfecting what? Set apartness. Can you perfect what it means to be set apart? Oh, but I like to hang out and go to dinner with these people. And oh, we go out and we socialize and do this. And oh, we hang out. This other group, I love to watch their videos and I love to watch their this and I love to watch their that. Are you being set apart or not? Don't touch that which is not clean. And by unclean, meaning it's not the way Yahweh desired it to be for you to partake of. If you're having a challenge with any of that, call for counsel. Tell me what your deal is and what your situation is, and I'll tell you to knock it off and we'll go on. Some of you are laughing because I've done that to you already. All right? You just got to let it go. You have to stop. Back to, what was the verse? Verse 12, you got to stop being held back because of your own affections. I mean, that's really where we run into this challenge. You guys are really running into challenges because you are still being restrained, held back because of your affections. You can only move so far forward with the restraints because your heart is split. Your heart is in more than one place. But I love them. I know. He knows. It's okay. Keep loving them. Just don't put them in a place of influence. Oh, but they're not influencing me. Okay, how many of you, you don't have to raise your hand, but how many of you can either say when you were children, or if you can even better, when you, as parents, can say that you have children that have said to you, because you don't like who they're hanging out with, and say, but they're influencing you. And they go, no, they're not, but you see it. Because you see the other child, and you see how your child has changed. And your child is becoming like those they're hanging out with. Okay, I was taught this, I was taught this in multi-level marketing. I was told that you are the sum total of your inputs. Brilliant. Sad that I had to learn that not in regular school or some other place, but in multi-level marketing. Because they teach you to be really careful about who you hang out with, what you read, what you study, what you listen to, what you watch, because you will become that. If you don't like the circle or the area where your life is, and you go find people that are where you want to be, whether that's in health or wealth or whatever. Same thing with your walk. If you're hanging out in the church, you're not going to learn how to keep Torah. You got to go be with people that keep Torah to learn how to keep Torah. Because you are the sum total of the influences. But you don't think you're being influenced when you're hanging out with some of these people that you're hanging out with. And I'm not just talking about people that may have been in the congregation, not in the congregation. This may be people you know your whole life. How much time do you spend with them thinking that they don't influence you? My wife used to know who I was talking on the phone to because she could tell that my whole language and my way I talked changed when it was somebody from back home in New York or some other thing. You fall right back into certain patterns. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Because you moved away, and when you go back home, all of a sudden you get caught up. The next thing you know, you're right back where you were. Because of the influence that you've allowed those people to have. And it's not a conscious thing. That's why I go back to, as a parent, you see your children being influenced and they don't see it. And maybe at some point in your life, you saw it in your life. You said, wow, I need to get away from this crowd. But maybe that was the big overtly obvious. It was the drug crowd or the sex crowd or whatever the crowd was. And you go, I don't really need to be there. But there are more subtle influences that look right but aren't right. Or kind of right or partially right, but they're not right. Because those are harder for you to realize that you're being influenced. But you are. And so you got to be aware of that. So I'm not telling you to stay at home and isolate yourself. Just say be careful about being among and how much influence you allow. Oh, but you don't understand. I'm hoping that they'll be influenced by me. Maybe. Somehow we tend to be influenced by the negative much more easily than the positive, though. You got to pretty much immerse yourself in the positive. All it takes is one bad apple. You guys have all heard that, right? One bad apple spoils the whole bunch. So you can't if you put a good apple in a bunch of bad apples, do they become good? Never happens. But that's what you're trying to do, though.
Well, you know, I'm hanging out with my old friends, and I'm hoping to influence them.
Good luck with that. Probably won't work. The good apple doesn't generally change the bad apples. However, the bad apple will change the good apples if you allow the influence of the bad apple. But, you know, how serious you are about this. Because he's talking about you being pleasing inside, you being able to win over his affection. He says, if you come out from among them, I shall receive you, says Yahweh. Do we not want to be received by him? But the opposite of that is also true. If you don't come out from among them, I won't receive you. You think you're receiving him, but he's not going to receive you because you're in a mixed mess. You're polluting the waters, so to speak. Doesn't take a lot. I'll give you a big giant glass and put a little bit of poison in there. You still going to drink it? That's only a little. It's only a drop. The water's clean. Just a little drop of poison. No big deal. It's just a little drop. Wow, Rabbi, that's tough. I'm not the one being tough. I'm reading you what he said. I'm just saying it as strong as I can because I want you to successfully go from here to where he receives you. That's the whole point. I want you to get from here to where he receives you. So if I come on too strong, sorry. I have a reason. Okay? And by the way, I'm not sorry I'm coming on too strong. I'm sorry you feel that it's too strong. Just to be clear. I'm not apologizing for being strong. But I'm sorry that you feel, remember this goes back to your feelings, that you feel like I'm being too hard, cold, this, that. Well, Rabbi, you just don't understand. All of you should hopefully catch yourself the next time you say that to anybody. Oh, but you don't understand. That's when your affections are grabbing the wheel. And you're struggling and panicking to try to find some way to justify what you know you shouldn't do. Because you don't want to deal with the fallout. There's a cost. There's a price. Your Messiah paid about as high a price as any, scourged. He didn't just die. He was tortured and then was killed. So you could have life. And you're worried about a few family members not talking to you for a little while. But you don't understand. No, I don't. I don't understand why that makes any difference in the decision. I understand why it upsets you. I understand why it's a struggle. I just don't understand why it has anything to do with your decisions. It should not have anything to do with it. And I can't say that, strong enough. Well, you're going to get an early one today because the next thing we're going to do is go to Romans. I don't want to just start there because it's going to be a whole big thing when we get there. So we're going to wrap up here and we're going to close with some prayer. And I say, of course, my wife is thinking, every time I'm not upstairs with the children, that's okay. We'll do a 2-hour afterburn, okay? And then you'll feel better. Okay. Let's go ahead and close and pray. It happens every time. She'll be in there with the kids when it's her turn. She'll be like, what were you doing in there for all that time? The teaching always ends pretty much at the same time. But here we go. Father, we come before you. And we ask a prayer for the Rebbetzin to be okay with that I went short. No. So Father, we come before you. And we want to be really appreciating and understanding that in our own lives, we need to reestablish the right authority in our lives. We have to understand who is our authority and who we're listening to and who's guiding and discipling us. And are we being led by our affections? Are we becoming unequally yoked? Are we coming out from among them? Are we touching that which we shouldn't touch or interact with? Because, Father, we don't want to be influenced away from you or away from the truth. We want to embrace it as fully as we can. So, Father, we look to you for guidance and strength in dealing with the part of us that is wrapped up in our affections and our emotions, to help us to not allow that to be part of how we make decisions. Help us to deal with the suffering and the pain that does come with making the hard choices that really shouldn't be that hard. It should be very easy for us to choose you over everything. But because we live in a world that at this time you've allowed not to be completely under your influence, you allow it to be sovereign over itself and influenced by Hasatan, etc. Because we're in that world, the choices are hard because the price can be very high. But yet, Father, it should be easy because we know that your son, Yeshua, paid the highest price so that we could have a reconciliation and a restoration so that we can be restored to you and have true life. So, Father, the price that we pay should be considered and reconciled. Reckoned is nothing. And so, Father, we appreciate so much the word and the encouragement and how you used Paul to, when he spoke to the Corinthian congregation, to speak to us as well. So help us to embrace and to appreciate all that you do and all that you are doing in our lives as we are allowed to run to from hard choice to hard choice, so that at some point, when we make the right choices, we can be received by you. So, Father, we thank you. We appreciate you so much as we come to you very humbly. In the name of above all names, Yeshua, our Messiah. Amen. Amen. Amen.
Thanks for listening to Now is the Time with Steve Berkson here on Hebrew Nation Radio. Now is the Time Radio is a production of MTOI, Messianic Torah Observant Israel. For more information, visit MTOI.org.